In the name of God, most gracious, most merciful, IslamScope greets you and presents a talk by Dr. Hassan Hatout at All Saints Episcopal Church in Pasadena, California, on the 1st of Ramadan 1411, March 17th, 1991. The lecture is one of a series at the church entitled Anchors in the Storm, Beliefs That Have Sustained My Life. Dr. Hatout, a medical doctor, now works for the cause of Islam at the Islamic Center of Southern California. Reverend George Regas, rector at All Saints Episcopal Church, introduces Dr. Hatout.
Hassan Hatout was born in Egypt. He's lived in a number of countries in the Middle East. For 25 years, he was professor of obstetrics and gynecology, university in Kuwait. In 1988, he left Kuwait and came to the United States, feeling that God had called him to try to help people understand Islam. And he is the guiding spirit at the Islamic Center in Los Angeles. We have been friends now for nearly 3 years. We work together on many projects, especially recently we, Rabbi Bierman and I, joined hands with Dr. Hatout as we try to bring together a religious community to oppose the war in the Persian Gulf. And as Dr. Hatout has said, we found the jewel in the mud. And that friendship that we have forged means so very much to me. I am so grateful that I have a new friend, this Muslim that I love, and I've asked to come and share his faith with us today, Dr. Hassan Hatout.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. I guess you don't have a Muslim with you every day, and I'm sure you have so many questions to ask. I enjoyed the service this morning, although I never expected to spend the first day of the fasting month of Ramadan at church. We take nothing by mouth, not even water, from dawn to sunset for a whole month. I think a very good exercise to put life in the modern slogan of just say no. And I believe that the hallmark of humanity, of a human being, is the being who says to himself no, or herself. Animals don't, but we do, and I think this makes us human. Well, the beliefs of my life, I think all stem from one central belief. God is, and that is, I assure you, not such a popular idea as you think. So many people, even in academia, do not see that. I was fortunate when it occurred to me some evening when I was a boy studying. Of course, all my life, mother said, God is, so God is. But at some time it was the vogue to be atheist, and I tried to follow my peers. Had it not been for that incident when I took a dictionary to look up the meaning of a word, and it occurred to me that the dictionary, with that alphabetical arrangement of words in it, if somebody suggested to me that it was so arranged following an explosion in a printer's shop, where all the letters were thrown up and fell down to be found arranged just as they are in the dictionary, I couldn't take it. I think everything in the universe, practically everything from the atom to the galaxy, to the red blood cell, to the heartbeat, etc., is far more sophisticated than arranging a dictionary. And to me, creation is proof of the Creator, and that is the axis of my life, and that is the primary belief. And when I became more confident that God is, I looked at His creation. To start with, I said, if God created all the creation, then He must be really infinite, or else there would be someone or something bigger than Him. And so to me, God is the eternal, the infinite, the absolute. And therefore, there cannot be two of them or more. Because if repeated, neither half would be absolute or infinite. So there isn't a God for the Muslims, a God for the Jews, a God for the Christians. He is the God of all, even the godless. And when I looked at God's creation, and we were told at school that man was the head of the animal kingdom, yet I contested that because I found that we were not animals. Although we share biology with animals, we have their same physiology, their same systems, their same feelings, their same instincts. And yet uniquely, we went beyond the biology. Animals didn't. We went beyond the biology to the realm of values. We have the mind to seek knowledge. We have the concept of good and evil, and this is my right and this is not my right. We have the will to choose. We are not programmed just for a simple step response to our instincts. We have the concept of good and evil, we have the choice, and we believe in accountability. This is, accountability is a human phenomenon. Even in an atheist community, if you break the red lights, you'll be cited. We are accountable. Accountability is part of our creation. And this concept of accountability led me to subsequent beliefs. Seeing that the universe is so delicately balanced, so beautiful, so miraculous, and seeing that some people live their lives in sin and thoroughly enjoying it. They are rich, they are strong, they are sensuous, they enjoy it and then they die. Others might live their lives wronged and trying to oppose it. And they might get hurt, they might go to prison, they might be killed, etc., etc., and then die. And the concept of accountability told me that death cannot be the end of everything. And after death, there cannot be void, because this would be inconsistent with the accountability phenomenon. And if so, this would be against all the delicate balance the whole universe is operated upon. And so I believed in the hereafter. And upon accountability, seeing that God created a race uniquely given the power to choose and uniquely will be accountable, it became logic to me that God, who loves this unique race, would contact them periodically to keep them posted about what is right and what is wrong, because good and evil take ever-renewing forms. And so it became the logic of creation, that if we are accountable, we would be constantly reminded. And here fits in the concept of God's messages and the messengers and the prophets. And I read about those messages and the messengers, and realized that really God is not inconsistent. Because the same moral code I found depicted in Islam, I found in Christianity, I found in Judaism. We share the moral code because the source is one. God cannot allow the Jew to lie and forbid it to Muslims. That would be inconsistent. And I believe in the one moral code in the messages. I became very comfortable when I found this also in Islam. Because when I read the Quran, which is to us the word of God and not Muhammad's composition, it is just like the Ten Commandments were not Moses' composition. And when I read in the Quran, God telling me and telling us, the same religion He established for you as the one He enjoined on Noah, and that we revealed upon you, Muhammad, and that we enjoined upon Abraham, Moses, and Jesus, that you should steadfastly uphold religion and break not your unity therein. And I believe in the unity of humanity under God. And as a human being, as a scientist, as a physician, as a Muslim, as a man of religion, any religion, I can trace all family trees to Adam and Eve. And had it been God's will or wish, we all would have been the same color, the same religion, and the same language. But we were made to be different purposefully. It wasn't by mistake. And the Quran said, God addressing Muhammad, had it been your Lord's will, then all those people on earth would have taken up your faith. Are you then proposing to compel people to take up the faith? And I read in the Quran, God saying, you mankind, we have created you from a single pair of a male and a female, and made you into nations and the tribes, that you might get to know and to cherish one another, not to despise one another. And I believe, as a human being and as a Muslim, that God instated the human race on planet Earth not to be another animal. I believe we are the vicegerents, the agents of God on this earth, to manage it upon the owner's manual. And this is the test. Because if we live our lives, then there is a life to follow. Then this world is the examination hall. We are being tested. We are being examined. And religion to me is not a noun. Religion is a verb. It is what resides in your heart, and you are firm by what you do. And so I believe it is the task of humanity to manage planet Earth according to God's will. Some of us have not gone beyond the biology. They live like animals, which they are. Some of us are completely inspired by the element of dust and clay our bodies are made of, but ignore and neglect the spiritual element, which is the breath of God in each of us. And I believe that if God created me, gave me the knowledge, gave me the guidance, and made me accountable, then I should be up to God's expectation and respect my responsibility and my accountability. And the God I believe in is not a God whom you meet some of the time and you do things from behind His back some other time, because He's always there. As Prophet Muhammad taught, heed God as if you see Him, for even though you don't see Him, He sees you. And this helped me a lot in moments of temptation, when no human was there, and when temptation was strong. I felt when alone that I wasn't alone. I felt when I was with someone that we were not just the two of us, because he was there. And this gives me strength to do not what I want, not what I desire, but what I should. And if what I desire is something that I know doesn't please God, then I say no and I implement it. And believing that we are born and we shall die, and that our two constant addresses is our mother's womb and our grave, I believe that everything in between shouldn't engulf me. I should control it. Nothing is transient. At one time I was in prison, not a thief, but for political reasons. And the situation was very, very gloomy. And I asked one of the guards, aren't there any news about people being set free, etc.? And he took off his belt and he said, what is this? I said, a belt. And he said, this is its beginning. So this is it? I said, end. And he said, whatever has a beginning, I said, has an end. And therefore I know this world shouldn't contain me, I should contain it. And I know I am here to be tested, and I hope to pass the test. And this helped me, including the day when I was operating in Kuwait, and I received a cable. And in the cable was read, Amal killed accident. And Amal was then our only child. And she died in a car accident. And I finished the care of my patient and immediately said, God, I know you are looking at me. I know in a year's time people would be the same, but this is the test in the first few moments. God, I thank you for what you gave. God, I thank you for what you entrusted me with. She has been your trust with us, now she is our trust with you. And nobody dared pay any condolences, because we are very satisfied and very content. And the memory is not bitter. She is in my prayer every day, but a loving memory. And I know someday we will meet. I have enjoyed the service today very much. I know I am in good company. I know you have good questions for me. So I think I better stop here and be open to your questions. Thank you.
If I may, I'd like to make one comment and then ask a question. Last week I attended a lecture given by Hans Kuhn, and I was very impressed and had a wonderful evening. And he spoke about one time when he went with other Christian colleagues to Lebanon, and very carefully the Arabs had been asked to leave before the Christian people got there, and the person arranging the conference made it very clear that it was too soon for Arabs and Christians to speak. And the point he made was that if we had begun to speak in the 1950s, perhaps we wouldn't have had this recent war. And I want to thank you and George and Leonard for beginning to bring us all, Christian, Jew, and Muslim, together so that we can better learn to love each other. And the question I want to ask is that I would like you to explain what the historical or theological reason is for the Arabs refusing the Jews their homeland.
Thank you very much. I thought it was the Jews who are refusing the Arabs the homeland. There is no theological reason. And if you remember the series of Mr. Abba Eban of Israel on television, when he said, in their whole history, the Jews were given justice only twice, under the Muslims in Spain and currently in the United States of America. Theologically, Jews and the Christians are the people of the book, our fellow believers in the same God, and our fellow recipients of scriptures from God. Theological, no. But the Jews have two claims on Palestine, the historical claim and the religious claim. On the historical claim, they lived in that land twice in history, some 2,000 years ago, and each for a few decades. But when they went there, the place wasn't empty. And when they left there, they didn't leave it empty. There were always people there. And anyone is welcome to live in the land of their forefathers. But to go and say, this is our land only, and the others has to move out, and we will make a state here, and you will be foreigners in it, and you go out, I think this is not supported historically. And everyone knows that the claim that we are giving a land without people to a people without land is not true, because everybody now knows that there are people in the land. The religious claim is God's covenant to Abraham. To your seed I give this land from the Nile to the great river of Euphrates. But who is the seed of Abraham? Abraham had two sons. One is Ishmael and the other is Isaac. And if you think that Ishmael is not the son of Abraham because his mother was mean, then read Genesis 17 onwards to find repeatedly the reference to Ishmael as his son, his son, his son. And if you think or claim that being the son of a maid makes him less of a son, then let me tell you that the 12 children of Israel were the sons of four women, two sisters and their two maids. And nobody ever claimed that some of the children of Israel were less so because their mothers were maids. And even the children of Isaac, who became the Jews, when Jesus came, some of them believed him and became Christians. Is that a reason to punish them and dismiss them out of the covenant? And some of those later became Muslims. Is that a reason to punish them and dismiss them out of the covenant? So the historical claim and the religious claim do not stand and do not support the usurpation of a nation and bringing another nation to take their place. And to me, if you ask my heart, Israel's birth was illegitimate. But an illegitimate child has the right to live. And Israel has become a political reality. And all the Arabs and the Palestinians have accepted this political reality, and they came to accept two homes. You have your home, and we have our home, and we live as good neighbors. But the result remains to be seen. Thank you.